Hello, I'm Sam Clements, and welcome to The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast. We, on the podcast, have had a little break whilst the cinemas have been closed for the majority of this year, but they are now back, and so are we, with a brand new title, a lick of paint, and we've changed our format a little bit. We're really keen to hear more voices on the show and really celebrate the love of cinema. So, Picture House cinemas have been open since early August, and we've played a number of great films in recent weeks, including Proxima, Baby Teeth, re-releases of Memories of Murder in La Haine, and of course, the big film that everyone was talking about over the summer, Christopher Nolan's Tenet. The most recent release to come to cinemas is Bill and Ted Face the Music, the third film in the Bill and Ted series, and the first one in over 20 years. So without further ado, let's move on to our feature presentation. We caught up with film critics Helen O'Hara and Amon Warman to get their thoughts on Bill and Ted Face the Music.
No way!
How's it going, Bill and Ted?
Helen, what did you think of Bill and Ted Face the Music?
I had a lovely time. Now, I'm going to confess here, I'm not at all objective about Bill and Ted. Like, they are part of my childhood, part of my youth. I have extremely warm and fuzzy feelings for both of them. So just being back in a cinema and seeing them be them was kind of immediately, like, that's at least two bonus stars right there. The fact that I also laughed is just kind of the cherry on top, you know? The air guitar riff on top. I don't know. It's something extra. It's not necessary, but it's really nice to have. So I do have quibbles with this film the more I think about it. You know, I can see that there is grounds for criticism. I just find it really hard to care about any of them.
I largely agree. The main thing with this movie is the chemistry between Bill and Ted. Mm-hmm. And that is still there between Keanu and Alex Winter. I will say, you know, I've been saying it for months now, and the film did not convince me otherwise, but beardless Keanu... Just no.
Yeah. It's a bit wrong. Yeah.
It's not working for
me. The beard is part of him now.
It really, really is. But I really like the casting of Samara Weaving and Bridget mm-hmm. Lundy Payne as the daughters of Bill and Ted, who get to take a similar journey that Bill and Ted took in the previous movies, while Bill and Ted themselves take trips to the future. And I thought that was a fun conceit. But yeah, I think the laughs are harder to come by in the second half of the movie for me, as opposed to the first half of the movie, which I think is really, really strong. But this is still, it may not be a most excellent adventure, but it's the most enjoyable one. And
it's definitely not a bogus journey, though. Like, which, by the way, ironically, is an excellent adventure. But I think you're right. I think the problem with the second half, and the biggest problem with the movie as a whole, really, is that it doesn't need higher stakes. I think it suffers from a little bit of sequelitis, where they think they have to raise the stakes, and you absolutely don't. It's Bill and Ted. You absolutely do not need higher stakes than they already have. I think all we need there is the idea that they have to write this song that will bring about world peace. In this film, they kind of amp it up. So not just world peace depends on it, but the entire nature of space-time somehow yeah. depends on this song. And, you know, that's a lot to put on the head of two doofuses. So...
It is.
That's my biggest criticism.
It also makes it feel too familiar or too similar to other movies. Like, uniting the world is a very Bill and Ted thing. It didn't need the stakes which you speak of. So, but yeah, I would still sort of definitely recommend people see this one in cinemas. It's a fun time. And if you're a fan of the previous movies in the franchise, there's a lot of nostalgia here to satisfy you in that regard too.
It is really good to see Alex Winter back on screen again, because he's such a likable presence. And, you know, Keanu's obviously been Keanu for the past 30 years since they were last together. And I love basically everything. I'm a diehard Keanu fan. I have been defending him since before it was cool to defend Keanu. And I think it's just good to see him with a kind of well-loved contemporary again. But I think Winters is interesting because he's been directing. He's done a phenomenal documentary about child actors, which he was back in the day. So it's kind of fun that he still has the old acting muscles and can still sort of pull focus as Bill from Ted, because it's no mean feat when you've got sort of an A-list buddy to still kind of step into the old shoes and play next to them.
Absolutely. It was very, very cool to see Alex back on screen again. And yeah, Keanu, I'm just here to... I just hope he keeps bringing back all his old roles. We're going to see him as Neo very soon again. Just bring back all the heat. Make a new B3. You can do another... Oh my gosh.
Point Break 2.
Thank you. That's what I was
trying to
think
of. Much
Ado About
Nothing 2? Sure.
I would watch all of these. I would watch all of these. It was good to just see these guys back on screen again.
Can we get a do-over on Something's Gotta Give, where he ends up with Diane Keaton?
Oh my gosh, yes. that always never sat well with me. I mean,
made no sense. Yeah. None.
It took me out of the movie because it was just so unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was good to see these guys back together again for sure.
Well, there you have it. Bill and Ted are back, but that's not all. There have been a host of fab movies out in recent weeks, and the big one was, of course, Christopher Nolan's Tenet.
He can communicate with the future.
Time travel.
No.
Inversion.
So, Amon, this is probably the second time we've been back at the cinema together since it all began.
Yeah.
After Tenet, right? Was that the last time?
Yep, that is correct.
Have you figured it out yet?
No, not even close. I did go from 15% understanding after one viewing to around 35, 40% understanding. So I just need maybe 3 or 4 more screenings and I'll be right there ready for that Tenet spoiler special that you can hit me up with all these questions. As it currently stands, mm-hmm. anybody asking me, what does that bit mean? I'll be like, sure, yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, let's go with that. Or I'll just be like, you know what? My friend Helen O'Hara, she has all the answers. She's much smarter than me.
Wow.
Just go and ask her. Because as it stands, for me, this movie is a lot easier to admire than to enjoy. For the simple fact that for large stretches of this movie, I did not have a clue what the hell was going on. And Christopher Nolan is a guy I really admire. I think he's an exceptional filmmaker. I'll always admire his ambitious filmmaking, his ambitious ideas. There's not really anybody in cinema doing it like that right now. And I think when he calibrates that perfectly, as is the case with something like The Prestige, which I still believe is his best movie,
then,
you know, it's amazing cinema. But I think a lot of the time, when I think back to his filmography, I think of Interstellar, even Dunkirk for me. His ambition, his cleverness, his smarts detracts from the movie experience itself, which is frustrating because the way that I'm wired is that if I fully understand, or even if I understand just enough of what's going on, then my enjoyment level rises considerably. And with Tenet, I just wasn't helped out enough in that regard to get to where I wanted to get to on an enjoyment level.
Yeah, I think there's that risk. I mean, I think I was lucky, really, in a way, in that the first time we saw it, I basically decided pretty early on, I think during the Clémence Poésy scenes, like not to give anything away, but Clémence Poésy's in it, I decided during her scenes, oh, it's all nonsense. Oh, okay, cool. And I just sort of relaxed into it and spent no time during my first watch really trying to figure out what was happening. I just kind of paid attention. And I came out of it with the inkling, which then grew over the next few days. I was like, oh, I think it does make sense. I think it does. And I started trying to think it through and figure that out. But I was lucky that I wasn't at all looking for sense when I first watched it. And I think that is the right way to do it, if you can get into that mindset, because I have enjoyed it the next few times.
I was trying, it wasn't working. Not only because, again, I'm not really wired that way, but the film has that line, and it's in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, but the film has that line, you know, don't try to understand it, just feel it. And it has that line early on, but it spends a lot of the running time of its movie trying to help you understand what is happening. So you can't have your cake and then eat it too in that regard. It doesn't help that the sound mix, which has long been an issue with Nolan movies, obscures important dialogue. And if I can't hear clearly what you are saying in IMAX, you have a problem. I mean, I don't want to watch this film in normal cinemas if I can't hear it in IMAX, because normal cinemas, their speakers will break. They will have to have technicians in after each screening because their speakers will break. That being said, I did like Ludwig Göransson's work. I'm a big fan of his for stuff like Black Panther and The Mandalorian. And I highly recommend people listen to the score on its own, because then you can appreciate it more rather than in the film, listen to the score with the movie and like, can you just make it a little bit quieter, please. Please.
Look, I have issues with Christopher Nolan at times, and I do think he can be not so much style over substance, because he's definitely stylish, but I think there is substance there as well, but sort of cleverness over feeling, maybe. And there's elements of that here. It's absolutely a criticism one could make. One could absolutely criticize his female characters, and God knows I have in the over the years, and would again in this case. I think Elizabeth Debicki is brilliant and maybe deserved better. But I had a lot of fun in Tenet. I really, really did. I thought John David Washington was, I've been a fan of his for a long time. I remember looking him up when I first saw him in, I think, what's the Rocks TV show? I've totally forgotten the name.
Ballers.
Ballers. I saw him in Ballers and thought, this guy's really good. Wow, why haven't I seen him before? And it turned out because he hadn't done very much at that point. But now he's one of those guys. Every time he turns up in something, you're like, well, this is going to be good. But nothing I've seen from him before prepared me for the levels of sheer movie star charisma in this. I mean, he is off the charts in this movie, and it benefits hugely, hugely from that.
Absolutely. One last thing before we bring this discussion to Tenet to a close. We cannot talk about this movie without talking about the fashion. Because I need all of the suits in my wardrobe immediately.
I even want the bungee cord vests. I mean, yeah. Even those are pretty fly.
Yes, we should do that together. That'd be so much fun. It looked like so much fun in the cinema. But yeah, there's a scene where John David Washington and Robert Pattinson's characters, the suits they are wearing and the swagger which they is coming off of them in that scene is magnificent.
Oh, the swagger is very real in this
really
movie.
It really is. Yeah. If anybody has Christopher Nolan's number, so I need to ask him about the suits. Where can I get them? Where can I buy them? I need them as well.
Where can I steal the money to pay for them?
That too.
Yeah, I think anybody who still had doubts about Robert Pattinson as Batman needs to watch Tenet immediately and put those doubts forever to rest.
I remember when Robert Pattinson was cast as Batman and people were, you know, still saying that guy from Twilight. Robert Pattinson hasn't been that guy from Twilight for a while now, and people need to go and check his filmography post-Twilight because he's been doing good work for years now, and he's really, really good in this, even though his character for much of the film on first watch is a cipher, but he really does good work and has really great chemistry with John David Washington that movie really needs, because again, you don't get to know much about the inner lives of these characters. It's just not that kind of movie. But he's really, really great, and he's been great in stuff like Good Time and The Lighthouse. So yeah, go and check out Robert Pattinson's filmography. It will be worth it.
So that's what Helen and Ammon thought of Christopher Nolan's latest. But what did you think? The film has been out for a couple of weeks now, and we reached out to a few Picture House customers to ask for their thoughts on the film.
I thought that Tenet was a welcome return back to the cinema, especially with the first scene, which was absolutely heart-stopping with the soundtrack. Following that, a definite liberal use of the backwards button throughout the rest of the film.
Tenet isn't really a film, it's more a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. But altogether, great film.
I really enjoyed watching Tenet. It was like watching a movie go backwards. The special effects were amazing, but the movie was so confusing that I'm still processing it now.
I really wanted to like it, as I loved Inception, but I thought the storyline was a bit thin. It wasn't really comprehensible, and I didn't feel any emotional connection to the characters, and I thought Elizabeth Debicki's character was far too weak.
I loved Tenet. It's smart, it's got great performances, it's visually stunning. The car chase sequence is just one of the best action sequences I've seen in a long time. And it reminds you why you have to see films on the big screen. It's really incredible, and I'll be going back for a second viewing.
Thank you everyone who sent a voice memo in, and if you'd like to send one in for next time, listen out at the end of the podcast or check out the show notes for more information. Whilst we were talking to Helen and Ammon, we asked what else they've seen recently.
Well, I went last week to see Les Miserables, which is not a singing film involving quite a lot of close-ups. It is the new French film from L'Age Lee, which made a huge splash at festivals last year. I think it was at Cannes. And it's blooming brilliant, actually. It's really quite tough. It's set in the banlieue. It's set, in fact, in Montfermeil, which is the same suburb of Paris that Les Mis partly took place in. But this one is just after the 2018 World Cup. It's based on real stories of police violence and rioting that happened in 2008. But it's a sort of an original film. And it's about, on one hand, a new young police officer joining a unit that operates in this suburb, and on the other hand, some young kids who are over-policed and under-resourced and have cause to be angry at the police, and violence basically breaks out. And it's one of these kind of films with a big steady build-up that kind of explodes towards the end. It's really, really, really good. I mean, the last shot of this film is going to stick with you for a really long time. It's absolutely fantastic. And it reminded me a lot of a film that's been re-released also handily this week, which is La Haine, which is the fantastic film from Mathieu Kassovitz in, what, 99, I think, was La Haine. Which is one of my all-time favorite French films. I just adore it. And, you know, it's astonishingly made, like really crisp, gorgeous black and white cinematography. Incredible soundtrack. One of the great soundtracks of the 1990s.
Okay, now you have my interest.
Yeah, I mean, mostly not so much score as songs and so on. Like, there's a mix from Edith Piaf into N.W.A.
You still have my interest. I like how movie.
But yeah, it's honestly, if you haven't seen Lion, you've got to catch up on it. And seeing it on the big screen again after all this time was amazing. So yeah, that's a heck of a double bill. If you're into France and violence, then yeah, you got to see those two.
C'est l'histoire d'un homme qui tombe d'un immeuble de 50 étages. Le mec, au fur et à mesure de sa chute...
How about you? What else is in the cinema that you want to watch?
Well, I know that Picturehouse are doing the Chadwick Boseman season yes. right now. I've long been a fan of Chadwick. I was really sort of crushed by his untimely passing recently. And on one level, it would be hard to sort of see him on screen again. That is something that I want to do because he was such a great actor. You think about films like 42, you think about films like Get On Up, and Marshall. There was a running joke in sort of the black community in terms of there was a popular black male historical figure that was getting the big screen treatment. There was only one phone call you made to play that dude, and that was the Chadwick Boseman. There are common qualities across, you know, people like Jackie Robinson, James Brown, Marshall, Thurgood Marshall,
yeah.
Who, which Chadwick sort of embodied, but he was able to find the essence and bring out the humanity in all of these characters in a really powerful way. And then that's before we obviously get to Black Panther and T'Challa, which is going to go down as one of the most sort of iconic roles in recent years or so. And it's going to be remembered for a while in large part because of that performance. And I remember the discourse was that Chadwick was being overshadowed by the likes of Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger, who's very good, or Letitia Wright as Shuri, who's also very good, because these characters are more flamboyant and fun, sort of, you know, in that way sort of more entertaining to watch. But if you look at the qualities that a person like T'Challa needs, Chadwick Boseman exuded that on a massive level. Think about the calm, the coolness, the
self-assurance as well, you know,
the self-assurance, the instinct not to immediately turn to violence, but you know, use intellect. That is what the African king of a nation which has been untainted by colonization, that is what that would look like. And again, Boseman just did a fantastic job with that role. So he's going to be missed in a major, major, major way, but it'll be good to sort of honor him by sort of watching him on screen again. And
And I think very few people saw films like Marshall in the first place, because Thurgood Marshall is not a figure who's known particularly in this country. And actually, I did watch that again in the wake of his death, and it's such a good film and such a good performance from him, because it takes a really interesting approach. It takes this great lawyer and doesn't let him lawyer. Like, so he was prevented from speaking in this particular trial that's at the heart of the film, and has to coach someone else through acting for his client. And it's so cleverly done, and it gives him such a lot to work with, actually, maybe more than the sort of grandstanding court scenes that we would have expected to see. Because it shows his cleverness, it shows his intellect, it shows his ability to analyze the situation. And he brings all that to it. I mean, it just helped that he was such a smart guy, a writer as well as an actor. He just imbued that in so many of his films. I just, oh, what a guy, what a loss.
As Amon mentioned, we are running a season dedicated to the late, great Chadwick Boseman at Picture House Cinemas. From now, it's actually started. It started on the 20th of September with 42, but there are still three more films in the season that you can watch. So first of all, we've got Get On Up on Sunday the 27th of September. We've got Marshall on Sunday the 4th of October. And we finish with Black Panther on Sunday the 11th of October. Tickets for films in this season are just £8, or £5 for Picture House members, and £1 from every ticket goes to colon cancer charity Fortitude. They've been really brilliant to work with whilst pulling together this season, and we're really proud to partner with them. Do check out the page on the season on the Picture House website for more information. We'll put a link in the show notes. I'm pleased to introduce a few of our very talented general managers who started a brand new show during lockdown. The podcast is called Have You Seen This? And I thought it would be fun to invite them onto our first pod back to ask for their opinions on their favourite time travel movies in honour of Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Hello there, my name is Ben Hammond and I am the General Manager of Ashford Picture House.
Hi, I'm Paul Breen and I'm the General Manager at the Exeter Picture House.
And I'm Ben Mercer, I'm the General Manager of Greenwich Picture House, and together we are Wild Stallions. No, wait, hang on. No, we are not. We are collectively a new podcast, Have You Seen This? A bi-monthly podcast exploring the movie industry and reviewing a couple of films every 2 weeks. Because we love to actually watch films. We don't just show them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We're really excited to be bringing you a brand new podcast talking about everything big and little screen.
And the reason that you can hear us right now is that to celebrate the release of Bill and Ted Face the Music, we wanted to talk about time travel. So what are people's favourite mode of transportation when travelling through time on screen?
Well, I think there's ultimately only one answer, but I think Mr. Hammond is going to chip in with that one.
I will chip in with this one, and there is only one answer, and that is, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, we're going to see some serious business.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Thank you so much for taking out the expletive there. Yes, if you're going to travel in time, there is only one way to do that, and that is with Doc Brown's very own DeLorean time machine. I mean, it's the clear answer here. Yeah. Which version of the DeLorean are we going for here? For me, it's obviously got to be Back to the Future 2, the hover conversion, but is there any love here for the train DeLorean time travel machine from Back to the Future 3?
No love at all for Back to the Future 3, I'm afraid.
See, it's
a little bit like the Godfather trilogy. If it was the first film in the series, you'd think it was pretty good. Unfortunately, it follows 1 and 2, so I have very little time for Back to the Future 3.
Maybe it's because I like westerns, but I have a lot of love for Back to the Future 3. I think
it's great.
Yeah, great jokes, really good set pieces in that film, and it looks magnificent on the screen. The cinematography is great.
It probably needs a rewatch because I tend to avoid it just because of childhood memories of it not being very good.
So when it comes to time travel, I was thinking about what makes good time travel, and the one note I have here is a production budget. Essentially, if you've got some cash to splash, you might as well put it up there on the screen. So, you know, your good examples are like a proper set. I mean, when you think of time travel, obviously the Time Lord comes up.
Yeah.
The famous TARDIS.
It's bigger on the inside than on the outside. What's wrong with that? The blue police box is iconic.
Essentially, yes. And also a cracking sound effect. Yeah. The BBC Sounds Workshop in the 60s creating that iconic sound as the TARDIS appears. Do you have any other examples of good time travel?
Well, I'm going to go on the complete opposite end of the scale. And if you're Richard Curtis and you just make Donald Gleeson stand in a wardrobe and wish really hard.
How would I actually...
How is the easy bit, in fact. You go into a dark place. Big cupboards are very useful, generally. Toilets at a pinch. Then you clench your fists like this. Think of the moment you're going to, and you'll find yourself there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure about that movie. Yeah, like you said, a budget tends to make things. There's a fantastic film called Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve, romance story. I mean, he fundamentally lies on a bed and self-hypnotizes himself back in time, but wearing the clothes from that period.
Other examples of maybe time travel on a budget? Primer from 2004, which is essentially a cardboard box in a U-Haul service.
You want to put my camcorder inside the box? It's so dangerous we can't look into it.
I'd recommend there's a brilliant Spanish film called Time Crime. It came out in 2007, but the conceit is that you can only go back in time approximately an hour. But I recommend it as a film if you can find it somewhere.
Any love here for H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, the 1960s version?
Yeah, it's great.
At first, I pushed the lever forward ever so slightly. And the laboratory grew faint around me.
H.G. Wells, the story itself is great. And the actual time machine itself is a piece of art.
Did he not want to put some wheels on it, though? It's not very portable.
It's about going through time. It's not like going through Dagenham.
So a lovely little chat then, all about all things time travel, and very much looking forward to Bill and Ted Face the Music. So if you did enjoy those nonsensical ramblings of three general managers, remember we do have our own podcast that we will now shamelessly plug, and it is called Have You Seen This? S-C-E-N-E. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/seenthis, for exclusive content, and of course the links to all of our future podcasts.
Yeah, please come see us on the Facebook page. Maybe let us know about time travel devices that we missed out. I forgot Terminator. Ugh.
I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
Well, there we have it. Thanks Ben Mercer, Ben Hammond, and Paul Breen, cinema general managers and hosts of the Have You Seen This podcast. And finally, I was quite keen to see what Helen and Amon were looking forward to watching in the future.
So what are you most looking forward to for the rest of the year? Because I know what's on my list to see.
I think it's still for me, and it's been the case for, you know, even before lockdown, but I really, really want to see Wonder Woman 1984. Mm-hmm.
Diana, look at you. It's like not one day has passed.
I really liked the first one in a big way. Gal Gadot really impressed me. I had my doubts going into that movie about whether sort of she could take on a role like that, but she absolutely knocked it out of the park.
Oh yeah.
And the trailers for both trailers for the sequel have just looked awesome. I love that Chris Pine is back. I love Chris Pine's fashion already in these trailers. That looks really, really fun.
The man can wear a bum bag. I don't know what to tell you.
He can really wear a bum bag. Even The Rock is like looking at the trailer. You know what? That's impressive. The guy can rock it. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to watch that one in particular. I'm also really looking forward to Bond. Helen, I know that, you know, you also really looking forward to it.
Oh,
you,
yeah,
you,
huge Bond
fan. You just can't
Bond
stop
fan.
Going on about it. The amount Ooh. Of messages Helen keeps sending me, Bond, Bond. But yeah, no. Nah. I'm really looking forward to that movie as well. I think it's going to end Daniel Craig's tenure on a really high note. And, you know, he's due for a good one. Because start with Casino Royale, which is still, for me, the best Bond movie period in the franchise. I think it's excellent. Then he went to Quantum of Solace, not so good. Then you went to Skyfall, really, really good. Then you went to Spectre, really not good. So, you know, it's going up, down, up, down, up, down. So the next one is up. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Not only does Daniel Craig look very good, but Lashana Lynch mm-hmm. looks amazing in these trailers. And I hope that, you know, I remember back in 2002, I believe it was, when Die Another Day came out, that there was talk of a spin-off movie for Jinx, for Halle Berry's Jinx, that never materialized. I hope that, you know, assuming that Lashana Lynch in the movie is as great as she's looking in the trailers, and if, you know, audiences really respond to that character, that, you know, the producers behind Bond make the decision to not make that character a one and done. Because everything which I'm seeing from her so far, I really, really like.
James Bond. License to kill.
How about you, Hannah?
Well, also Wonder Woman 1984, which I just am super, super hyped about. Dune as well is a big, big one for me. So Denis Villeneuve's take on the Frank Herbert novel. I adore the novel. I was a big skeptic of every other filmed version of Dune ever. But between you and me, I went on set of this one for Empire, and the sets were enormous, incredible. Genuinely some of the best things I've ever seen in my life. And I have been super hyped about this ever since. It has one of the most embarrassingly talented casts ever assembled, who apparently kept getting starstruck by each other, which is kind of fun. Like, literally every time, I think every time they had a get together, Jason Momoa would be like, oh my god, that's Javier Bardem, etc., you know. So yeah, I'm super, super hyped, and I hope that they actually make Dune work this time, because I think they might. I really think they might. So yeah, that. I'm a bit of a sucker for a bit of Death on the Nile, another Gal Gadot film. So, you know, she's going to have a good winter, hopefully. Although I can't remember who done it, so I don't remember if she's actually going to survive the winter, but fingers crossed for her sake. You know,
they might change it for the movie. You never know.
I mean, I don't think you do that with Agatha Christie's, though, because they're all very kind of finely tuned, you know? They're kind of like... So yeah, those are probably the big ones. I know that, you know, films have been moving around the release schedule, but I'm optimistic and hopeful that we still get to see these films on the big screen, because that is where they deserve to be seen. And certainly something like Dune, and even from what we've seen in the trailers, something like Wonder Woman, you don't want to see that on your TV. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be on the big screen for sure.
They're picking my family off one by one.
Let's fight like demons.
I've just remembered there's one more film which I'm really excited to see. Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. Because Coming to America is still my favorite comedy of all time, and it's not really close.
Wow.
I might be in triple figures on watching that movie, and the way I will laugh hard at everything still, even though I know what's coming. Only amazing comedy movies can do that, and Coming to America definitely is that. So I went back and forth initially in terms of, do I want a sequel to this? The first movie is so perfect, but the cast, you know, all the, you know, reassembling for the movie, and with the addition of people like Wesley Snipes and stuff like that, I'm really excited, and I hope that when the first trailer is finally sort of unveiled, then, you know, that excitement is rewarded with, you know, footage that makes it seem like they've really pulled this off, because I would love it if they did. I love Coming to America.
It is a really great film. It's one of my favorites.
It's Marmon and Craig. I'm calling Craig.
I mean, it's not number one of all time for me, but it's up there.
What's
the
number one comedy of all time?
I don't know. It's probably something like, not to be highfalutin, but it's probably His Girl Friday or The Apartment. I mean, and I only say highfalutin because they're old. They're actually like massively funny films, but yeah, probably one of those two.
Fair. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed this podcast, guys. You can find me on Twitter at awoman. That is where all my musings are. Hopefully, when things kick off again, that is where you'll also find my video edits on YouTube. So yeah, Twitter at awoman. Helen, where are you at?
I am also on Twitter at Helen L. O'Hara. Not to be confused with the violin player from Dexy's Midnight Runners. And yeah, also on the Empire podcast most weeks, and occasionally in Empire magazine as well.
And that's a wrap. Thank you, Helen and Amon. Do check out their social media channels. They are two of the best people talking about movies on their Twitter feeds. Highly recommend giving them a follow. I also love hearing them on the Empire podcast. And on that note, that was our first podcast back. A huge thank you for listening. For more information on anything Picture House Cinemas related, do head to picturehouses.com. There are also a few handy links in the show notes for specific things we mentioned in the podcast, including details of the Chadwick Boseman season, which is in cinemas right now. If you'd like to get in touch with us on social media, do tweet us on @picturehouses, or you can find me @sam_clements. If you'd like to send us a voice memo on something that you've recently watched at the cinema, send us a no longer than 20-second audio clip and email it to podcast@picturehouses.co.uk. That's picturehouse with an S on the end, .co.uk. If you like what you heard, please make sure you subscribe on your podcast app of choice so you never miss an episode. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and a rating. It really makes a difference, especially as we're relaunching the show and getting it back up to speed. We'll be back on the 9th of October to talk about a few more films with a couple of new guest critics. But in the meantime, take care, and we're looking forward to seeing you at the cinema again in the not too distant future. This podcast was produced by Stripped Media. It was hosted by me, Sam Clements, and a big thank you to our guest critics, Helen O'Hara and Amon Warman, for taking the time to join us and talk about the new releases. A big thank you also to the Have You Seen This podcast, Ben Hammond, Paul Breen and Ben Mercer, and a huge thank you to everyone who sent a voice clip in. A big thank you to Kobe and Tom at Stripped Media for all of their help getting this episode together, and to Megan and Paul from the Picture House team. And whilst we're saying thanks, a big thank you for making it to the end of the credits. You're part of the special club. We'll see you again soon. Take care. Goodbye.